Welcome to season 3 of Recovery Rocks. I'm Lisa.
And I'm Tawny. We're so excited to be back. And we are also excited to be sponsored by Tempest for this season. Tempest is a program that helps you stop drinking and start feeling better. As of this spring, they have a brand new membership program that offers monthly content, community, and expert guidance. You can learn more about all of their different membership options right now by heading to jointempest.com.
We are huge fans of Tempest. We know what fantastic work they're doing to help people stop drinking.
Absolutely. And what we love about them is that they're also super inclusive of all communities. Hey guys, we are going to talk to you about something super exciting today. Loneliness.
Happens to all of us.
It really does. And you are not alone in your loneliness.
No.
That is something that, you know, we for this season, we sourced through social media, what are some topics you want us to cover? And this came up quite a bit.
Yes.
A lot of people wanted advice on how to deal with loneliness and sobriety. And I think that, like, what do you have? What do you have to say?
Well, to me, for me, when I first got sober, it was 2004, and I had zero sober references, none. I didn't know anybody. Nobody in my family was sober. I didn't have friends who were sober. And there was not this kind of community like we have now online and podcasts and all these other ways to connect with people who are choosing not to drink. And so I certainly felt very, very lonely because it was, everybody was wonderful. Everybody was so supportive and they got it that I needed to do what I was doing and that, you know, the people were grateful that I was getting help and that I was, you know, going to stop drinking. But they really didn't know how to support me in that. And that was fine. I mean, there were things, and I know we've talked about this before, like when we've talked about people, places, and things that I had to step away from, right? So, you know, I went so far as to, on my walk home from the subway station in the city, change my route walking home because I just couldn't pass the bars that I used to walk into and drink
totally,
in. Like,
yeah.
Pete's Tavern was a total trigger for me. So all these things were new, and I was very alone in them. I had my friends were fantastic, but I couldn't go out to dinner with them on Friday nights or, you know, we did things like get together for breakfast or go to a museum, like things that people, you know, actually do on a weekend because I had been living like a vampire and never saw the light of day. And so that was great. There was this discovery of all these things. And I was doing a lot of new things and I was meeting new people through 12-step because that's basically all there was. And, you know, I was very connected to it from the start because I really found it helped me and I still do it today. And I also had my friend Mark, who lived in my building, who was really good. Like, he would come up on Saturday nights, you know, when I couldn't go to the beach with all my friends. He would come up and we'd eat pizza and watch the HBO movie on Saturday night. And so in a sense, I wasn't lonely, but I felt very alone. You know, I couldn't talk to anybody who got it really other than some of the people, the people in program. And I had a sponsor.
Well, and you were single, right?
I was single.
When you were getting sober. So that's a whole other layer to it.
Yes. But I think it's interesting because, a lot of the times that I was alone in early recovery were the times where I found the most peace in a way because I could just lay there and watch a Law & Order marathon and, you know, eat some Ben & Jerry's or do whatever I was doing. And I didn't have to be out, you know, putting myself out or in any way on for somebody, like be interacting in any way. And I could just be quiet and, you know, that would be okay. But I learned that even when I was with people early, I still felt very alone. You know, it is because, look, recovery is something, and I still, to this day, I've never once said, I'm never going to drink again. I still say, you know, I'm not drinking today because I can't think in those terms.
You
and
have
I don't
to.
Want to think, you know, and, you know, to explain sort of what it felt like and it, to somebody else was one thing, but then at the end of the day, the journey is our own. You know, we do embark, like they told me when I was in the detox, you know, you need to stop drinking or you're going to die. And I firmly believe that was to be true. But they also said, if you want to have long-term recovery, you're going to have to want it more than you've ever wanted anything before. And you're going to have to chase it like that. And to me, there that was something that I felt like, you know, there were aspects of it that something as simple as laying on my bed, eating Ben and Jerry's, watching a Law and Order marathon was me chasing it. You know what I mean?
Like, well, it's funny because what you're describing now is like what all of the magazines are telling you to do for self-care.
Yeah.
You know, like that's
right.
That's trendy. Well, you were a trailblazer.
A trailblazer with my Ben and Jerry's. And...
But I mean, I think you really, you're so right where you're talking about almost like you're dating yourself.
Oh my God. You're meeting yourself.
You're getting to
know yourself for the first time.
Totally. And that is something that, I mean, there's probably ways to do it while you're still drinking, and you and I aren't going to know about that. But doing that sober, I think, made me a better person.
Yes.
Like changing the script of like, yes, I was lonely, but then I also learned how to enjoy being alone.
How to be alone. Yeah.
And I think that in turn makes me a better partner now, because I was single for a very long time in sobriety.
Mm-hmm.
Very long. And I think I needed to go through that, those moments of laying in bed and
right. and being like, you're with yourself.
Totally. And, you know, crying, going to movies alone, going traveling mm-hmm. alone, doing those things that made me get to know who I am.
It's so true. Yeah. Without that time, I mean, that's, you know, to sort of just feel like what it felt to be in my head and in my body. And which is scary. Like if someone had told me, you know, part of the growth you're going to try and go for in, you know, when you stop drinking is, you know, sitting, you're going to spend a bunch of, you're going to come home after work on Friday night. Your friends are going to be out in the bar. You're going to, you know, you're going to know that you don't have any business being there. And you're going to sit by yourself and you're going to watch some TV and you're going to go to bed. And I would have been like, I can't do that.
Yeah.
I can't do that. But when I did it, you know, and it was hard. Of course, it's hard at first. And the thing that kept me going in the early days, though, was that waking up the next morning. Was when I would wake up on Saturday morning and I would be like, oh my God, it is Saturday morning and I did not drink.
You're not hungover.
Well, and knowing, like, I would get up really early. There was a 7:30, 12-step meeting I used to go to on Saturday mornings that I loved. So it was nice because I would know, I would see some of my friends there mm-hmm. and go to breakfast after, whatever. But there were so many Saturday mornings that I would be walking there at, like, you know, 10 after 7 in the morning or something. And I'd be thinking, if I were not sober, I would still be up doing blow.
Oh, yeah.
Right now.
Smoking like, cigarettes and chugging wine. And
At that hour of the morning. Ugh, and then, yeah. Like, the gratitude. So it wasn't necessarily the being alone that I loved at first. I learned to really appreciate it and to want that time. But I was in it for the next morning. You know, I always say to people, you know, I can promise you that you will never wake up in the morning regretting the fact that you did not drink last night.
100%.
And, you know, knowing that and then proving it to yourself over and over a series of Saturdays where, you know, I might not have been happy about sitting by myself on Friday night, but I knew what was going to happen on Saturday if I did that. And that became worth it. And that to me is what sort of the chasing looked like, the chasing part of recovery. And, you know, then it becomes, you know, something you want. And then it's like, okay, now I have to learn how to, or I'm hoping I can learn how to love the Friday night part too, you know, And then I did. Then I would be like, after, you know, and it takes time. Like there was a time takes time. But I would be like, okay, you know, I'm going to go home. It's Friday night. And it's exactly what you're saying. Self-care. I'm going to run a bath. I'm mm-hmm. not going to have a glass of wine in the bath, but I'm going to take that hot bath and, you know.
Maybe you have some tea.
Maybe I have some tea.
Maybe you have a LaCroix.
Perhaps I have a LaCroix. I don't know. LaCroix was not. Like,
it wasn't a thing.
No. Oh, my gosh. People used to say that, you know, club soda and cranberry juice was the official cocktail of Alcoholics Anonymous.
That's fair.
Yeah, but now it's not. Now there's so many other things.
Well, and that's excellent advice for the for people that do go the support group route, whether it's 12-step or not, you know. And, you know, I didn't go that route.
Yeah, what did you do when you felt lonely early?
So I got sober in 2015, the very end of 15. So that's, you know, I found a lot of community through social media.
Yeah.
I started the blog, sobrietyparty.com, mm-hmm. to document my 1 year of sobriety. And then I was just essentially promoting a blog. I wasn't even trying to connect to people. But then I realized that, like, oh, there's other people doing this kind of stuff, too.
Yeah.
And that made me feel a lot less alone. That's how I met you.
Yeah. It's
you
true.
Know?
It's true.
I went to your book signing, mm-hmm. one of your readings. And, like, I started going to stuff like that. Like, granted, I was living in New York City, so there's so much going on.
Yeah.
And, like, if you're living in a smaller town, these options may not be available to you. But there's a lot of digital options.
Oh, my gosh. I direct people. And if anybody is ever interested, you know, let me know or let Tawny know to go to. There's a number of these private, you know, secret Facebook groups where it is just people in a room where, you know, everybody's trying to do the same thing and there's rules and there's admins and, you know, it is just people from all over the world with 24/7 support of, like, hey, this sucks and I'm doing that, or hey, here was a great thing that happened, and just, you know, there.
Well, and there's phone meetings, which I liked. When I was doing SLA meetings, the sex and love addiction meetings, but I did phone meetings, and because I didn't want to go to an actual meeting. Because I was afraid that I was going to have sex with people there.
That you're not the only person who I've heard say that.
I know. And I was like, well, I guess I could go to women's meetings, but, like, as a bisexual woman, like, no meeting felt safe for me. So I was like, I needed to go to the phone. And that helped me a lot. I was able to, like, stay at home in my pajamas and just attend a meeting through the phone. Like, how cool is that? Like, that, I don't know how long those have been around, but I found a lot of comfort and support in that, and I felt so much less alone.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you there are inevitably going to be those times where you could be in a room with 100 people and you get that lonely feeling, right?
Yeah.
You don't have to be, you don't need to be the only person in the room to feel alone. And you know, I have found, for me, when I have those feelings of, you know, I'm, you know, in my own head too much on that and creating my aloneness.
What did you say earlier? Your head's a bad...
Get out of your head. It's a bad neighborhood.
Yes, I love that.
Yeah. And it leads to sort of the same thing, which is, like, the way that I... Because, I don't know, I would go to things and I would feel like, you know, everybody's looking at me. I don't know anybody in this room. You know, I don't belong here, whatever it is.
Well, like, especially if you're at a party and you're the only one not drinking.
Right.
It feels like there's a spotlight on you.
Right.
And really, most people don't notice. But it feels like you, everyone's looking at you because you're not drinking a beer.
Right.
But
right.
It's usually not like that. But
it's amazing how much it's not like that, actually.
I know.
When you realize, like, one of the things I realized pretty quickly was that, you know, I was one of those people that was watching everybody and what everybody else was drinking because I wanted to feel better about my own drinking.
Totally. And I was like, oh, like, are you not going to finish that beer? Or, like, oh, do you want to take this shot with me? Like, oh, you don't want to take a shot?
Because
and I'm like,
I refuse to feel alone in my own, like, alcoholism.
Totally.
Right.
That's
Yeah.
No, you're so
drink
right.
with me. Yeah.
Drink with me. Like, that was so, like, that's a good point, because we were dealing with that loneliness while we were drinking, too.
Yeah.
And then, but we didn't identify it as loneliness.
Right.
We weren't feeling anything. So,
yeah.
Of course, we didn't know. And then you remove that substance, and then you're left with the, like, bare naked reality of, holy shit, these are my feelings. How do I deal with this?
Right.
And one of those feelings is, I'm super lonely.
Right.
And what the fuck do I do?
Right.
And... It's so scary, but, like, man, we are here to tell you that everyone deals with it.
Oh my God,
and
everybody.
There's more resources
the
now
thing
than ever.
Is, like, it is, and it's also one of the things that helped me early on. I know, you know, a lot of people said to me to, you know, reach out to other people. I'd get phone numbers and all that stuff, and to actually do that. And making those phone calls is incredibly difficult.
Oh,
I found, like, you know. But I once I was able to, you know, basically learn how to start a conversation with someone when I hadn't been drinking, like at a party. You know, I never did that. I didn't know how to start a conversation with somebody.
Yeah.
But once I sort of
started, like, Jack Daniels too?
Let's hang out. How many boyfriends did I meet over a bottle of tequila?
Oh my God. Yeah. He loves the Doors and Jack Daniels. We're meant to be.
It's written in the stars. Yeah. So, I mean, I think once I learned how to, you know, talk to people a little bit without alcohol. And you know what's amazing is that when you ask somebody, like, you know, hey, I remember being, you know, if I was at a party or something like that, I'd be like, hey, so how do you know the host? That person will just launch into.
Yeah, you're right.
Launch into their whole thing. You don't even have to keep talking, you know. People are so, I learned this in recovery, that people really love talking about themselves, and that,
they,
you know,
really do.
And when I would be able to, in situations where I was in a crowd and felt lonely, where I would be able to say to somebody, you know, just like, hey, you know, I'm Lisa, I went to school with so-and-so, how do you know so-and-so? And just let them talk. One, the conversation happened without me having to do anything, mm-hmm. and by asking the question. And two, I would start, I discovered in recovery that I am intensely curious. So people would start talking about their stories and I would have a million questions. Like whatever they were saying, they could be talking about, like, oh, I know so-and-so from marching band in high school. And I'd be like, really? What instrument did you play? What did so-and-so play?
Who are your influences?
Right. Who are your influences? Right. But that's it. And like, and in a weird way, it was like I was doing it so that I didn't have to talk. But I also found, like, oh, I'm actually a more curious person than I thought I was, because all I cared about was my next drink. Like,
that's why you're a good writer.
I'm talking to you because you're between me and the bar, and I need to get to the bar, so I have to get you out of my way. So the most I would say to you would be, excuse me, you know, move over. I need to get a drink. But, you know, once you start, and then I learned so much about people.
And
gets you out of your head, that whole bad neighborhood.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, I'm listening to this person and learning about the marching band my friend was in high school that I had no idea about. And I'm no longer sitting there thinking, I'm lonely, I suck, I shouldn't be here, nobody likes me. You know, it takes you out
That's
of your
real.
Head. And that idea of being, of getting taken out of your head, I think is huge with when you get a lot of people experience, and I definitely experienced sort of like a second year slump in recovery. Like, okay, you've gone through all your firsts, you've had your first, you know, you've been up, you've been down, you've done all that. And now, you know, you feel much better, but you start to take for granted that you feel pretty good.
Yeah.
So then it can be like, you almost feel bored in your, you know, in your second year. And that was when I remember for some reason having a lot of experiences where I would be, you know, like, complaining about that, or, you know, to myself, to my sponsor, whatever. And, you know, being told, just go reach out to a newcomer. Just go reach out to someone else. And it's so true, because not just getting lost in their story, but then you want to kind of do service.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the person will say, I'm really struggling because it's Thanksgiving this week and I don't know how I'm going to go to my family. And then you get to help that person and you say, well, I can tell you what it was like for me. This is, you know, these are some things you might, and all of a sudden you're out of your head again. That's the whole thing is, loneliness, I think, is very real, for sure. But it is also something that can really spiral. And it's one of those things that, you know, sometimes we have to just sit in it. And sometimes there are actions we can take to kind of move ourselves out of it.
That's true. Sitting with it is hard, whatever the feeling is.
Like, yeah.
You know, we want to just distract ourselves in any sort of way to not deal with reality, which is why we used in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, getting to understand your feelings is so challenging. And, you know, you reach for other sorts of distractions. But then it's like, no, like, I actually need to just sit and feel this.
Right.
I need to cry. I need to journal. I need to punch something that is not
going to hurt. A
pillow. Yeah. I'm thinking, like, what's not going to hurt
punch
something?
Punch a wall? Wait,
I was
going to
say punch a wall, but don't punch a wall. Like, I'm a big fan of the Wrecking Club in New York.
I love that you rent a room. Okay,
and
Music Minute. Talk about your experience at the Wrecking Club.
Okay. The Wrecking Club, they're all over the place now. Like, they're very trendy. Kind of like Lisa's self-care.
Yeah.
So you literally, you go rent a room and break shit.
And what do they do? They like come and put stuff in the room that will break easily, or
So you basically order it all ahead of time online. Like, you know, you go to the website,
even find this,
and you pick. A friend of mine went. It was a really cute first date idea. Like, side note, if you want a sober first date idea, like that doesn't involve booze, go break some shit.
That's actually a really good suggestion for a sober date.
It was a wonderful, like, I mean, I took my boyfriend, but like,
yeah,
it's a great first date. It has nothing to do with booze.
Right.
And it's a physical release of stress.
It's almost
and
like
tension.
Working out.
It is. It's 100%. And so like the cool thing is that you make a playlist. You book the room for, you know, 15, 30 minutes, whatever.
Oh, my God.
We did 30 minutes, and I will say that was too long.
15 minutes is probably
15
good.
15 is plenty. Like, 30 minutes, after 15 to 20 minutes, you are just depleted of everything.
Yeah.
But so I made a playlist of, you know, like, Limp Bizkit, Marilyn Manson, Primus, like, you know.
You went full metal.
Oh, yeah, like, Nine Inch Nails. I'm just like, we need to, like... Of course, and I had to do Break Stuff by Limp Bizkit.
Classic song.
I might be the only person who still listens to Break Stuff regularly. I mean, like at least once a week, I'm listening to Break Stuff. But my boyfriend recorded me breaking stuff while listening to Break Stuff, very meta, and in the Wrecking Club, and I posted it on Instagram. And then Fred Durst.
You tagged Fred Durst.
I tagged Fred Durst,
lead singer.
The lead singer of Limp Bizkit. And he reposted it, and I was like, I've made it.
I was like, I saw that come up, and I was like, oh, my God.
Like, I'm on Fred Durst's Instagram story. This is the greatest part.
That's so funny.
But I like that sort of physical release, some people need that.
100%.
A boxing class, kickboxing. Like, there is a lot of good that comes from, a positive destruction where – you know, we're so used to self-destructing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why don't you just go to a safe space where you can destroy some other stuff?
Yeah. I love it. I think that's such a great idea. Because I am not an emotional, like, I'm not a crier. And sometimes it, you know, upsets me about, like, I feel like when truly sad things happen, like when I lost a friend and when I lost my dad, like, I didn't feel like I cried enough. And I'm like, why am I not? I should be crying more, but it's not really what I do. I mean, I cried, but it wasn't like how I would imagine someone would cry in those circumstances and stuff like that.
So
and
how did you feel it? What was your reaction?
I felt this tremendous sadness and this grief. And like, talk about feeling lonely. Like, you feel like you've lost a piece of you. But I realize now, and it really just like struck me like that clearly it's something I got to work on because I do definitely have too much stuff pent up because I went recently to I was doing a meditation thing and at a sort of retreat workshop thing one day recently and we did this exercise in a kind of guided meditation thing, but it was an exercise where you are kind of in like child's pose in yoga. You're kind of like down on the mat and you start screaming as loud as you can and you bang, you just smack, you know, like punch the mat and punch the floor and scream as loud as you can. And I'm like, and as we're hearing this, I'm like, oh my God, like, really? Like, I'm
very woo woo.
I know. I'm like, this is, I can't. I'm
this gonna... sounds like an episode of Goop, but like, I will keep listening.
Right. And I'm like, you know what? I'll just try. I'll see if I, you know, I'll fake my way through this. I started screaming. There was a sound that came out of me that I did not know I owned. It was guttural. It was so loud. And I was I banged so hard my arms were sore the next day. And when I told the person who led it, I was like, I can't believe how loud I was screaming, how much I was screaming. I was like, and she was like, I actually heard myself screaming because it was in a circle of 20 screaming women. And I could still hear myself screaming. She was like, wow. Like, I'm like, oh, you know, clearly I had some shit in there that had to come out.
How'd you feel after that?
I felt so good.
Yeah.
I felt so good. So, you know, I think whatever I do without the crying thing, you know, it the screams, it's definitely in there. And I think breaking stuff would be a good way to go with that energy.
It is. And I mean, like, I think breaking stuff is along the lines of like the screaming and like the pounding on the mat.
Yeah.
It's there is something connected.
Yeah.
Some people, like, I'm not a big crier.
Yeah.
And so, like, if I do feel like, when I do cry, it's like a sob because I just don't, it just doesn't happen that often.
Yeah.
But I do, I'm much more in connection and much more in touch with my anger and rage.
Right.
Than I am with whatever sadness.
Sounds like I may be too. Yeah.
Maybe we should go break some shit.
Maybe we need to break some shit. Yeah. So I guess like where we're coming out on this is that, you know, loneliness is a fact. It's something we know everybody deals with. And there's all different ways, you know, it can manifest itself in different ways. And there's different ways of coping with it. And whatever it is that, you know, that gets you through it is what, you know, is what's important. And just knowing, I think starting to trust that. Mm. It's going to be over at some point. Like, it's going to pass.
It's not a life sentence.
It is not a life sentence.
It comes and, like, these waves are going to come and go. Yeah. But it's really, if you can flip that script of, you know, loneliness versus I get to spend time with myself.
And that's a hard,
that's huge.
Right. It's a hard script to flip. But I think you're right. I think at a certain point, you know, like me looking forward to feeling good on Saturday, but dreading Friday night before it turned into me looking forward to both Saturday night and or Friday night and Saturday over time. It's almost like a muscle, like you start practicing.
100%. You're right.
But like everything else, you have to be really patient with yourself and kind to yourself. Because, you know, the most important thing for me every day, still the most important thing I do every day is not pick up a drink. And, you know, as long as I don't do that, I'm aces. So.
And on that note.
On that note, we'll talk to you next time.
Thanks again to Tempest for making season 3 of Recovery Rocks possible. You can find my work at tawnylara.com, TawnyLara. Find me on social media at Tawny M. Lara. And you can follow my blog at sobrietyparty.com, sobrietea. Lisa, where can we find your work?
You can find my work on my website, lisasmithadvisory.com. You can also find me on social at Girl Walks Out. And you can find my book, Girl Walks Out of a Bar, at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or any other bookselling websites.
And make sure to click subscribe whenever you're listening to our podcast. You can get new episodes from Lisa and I every week directly to your phone.
Exciting.
In your pocket, like Alanis Morissette.
And then if you like what you hear, please rate us and review us. And thanks so much again for listening.